Hey, welcome back to my podcast. What am I watching right now? And you're listening to your host, Anjali Sinha. And in this podcast episode, I'm going to talk about a unfinished, or should I say like a short series that I've watched on Netflix. It came out yesterday and I think I liked what I saw and just want to talk to you about it. Without further ado, let's get into it. So at first, I didn't understand like what was going on when I clicked on the drama series. I felt like it was a short movie or more like a staged documentary. It's called Suli the Persona or A Persona or something like that. So I didn't know that it was about a K-pop idol, and especially like the first episode is more like a aesthetic metaphorical short story, or should I say like a drama, like a short drama. And it follows, I'll just, for the sake of not complexing my vocabulary for this podcast episode, I'm just going to call it a short story. So it's about a young girl who transforms into a pig, or if I mean you can look at this short story in two ways. It could also be about the pig who turns into a girl and then it wants to go to heaven, so it goes through a sort of a purgatory, like a place before you can go to heaven or hell. But in the short story, it's called an immigration point, and there it gets chopped up into meat to be sold to humans. So it's interesting. The story follows a girl who is an orphan, probably. I mean, sometimes the translations are not completely correct, especially in my region. So that's what I understood. Like the girl child is homeless or an orphan, and then she comes across a person that she feels attached to, or maybe this person took her in, and then she starts calling her Omma, so that's like mother. And this woman is not really I'll say overly affectionate. I mean, it's kind of hinted in the short story, and she gives that little girl affection because she's just there. And then we see that this woman gets into a car accident and the girl is sitting next to her, and the girl doesn't really know her name. Neither this woman that she is calling Omma has given her a name either, like she didn't take the time. So that tells me that this woman doesn't really love her that much, or maybe she's not that affectionate to her, or maybe she just kept taking care of the girl because the girl clung to her, or maybe she needed companionship. I'm not really sure, it's not explained in the story. But when she's like dying, she marks her face as a number, like the girl is narrating this short story. So she says that like, I'm a pig heading off to the slaughterhouse. And then we see this like metaphorical story where this girl lives alone, she's slaughtering pigs, I think for a living, to sell the pig or for the products or something. Again, it's not explained. I think it becomes a bit of, or I should say like, it becomes like a sequence of the narrative of the short story. So this girl just keeps slaughtering pigs and she lives like that for 12 years until one day she thinks that when a pig comes into her slaughterhouse for slaughtering, it has the same number printed that her dead Omma you know, like marked on her cheek. So she thinks that her Umma has returned, and at first, she kills the pig as a part of her job without really realizing that, you know, that's her mom, or it's like a figment of her imagination. She keeps reconnecting the dots, thinking that this pig is her mom now, and she tries to put the pig back together. Somehow the pig comes back from the dead as living, and she just like keeps this dead pig around. We don't really see the dead pig as a living person. I'm not really sure. She just keeps the dead pig around, but there are sequences where she's saying that we were kids together, we were adults, we played, we laughed, we shared dreams, things like that. We get a small short sequence, and didn't really understand if the pig was living or dead at that point, so we don't really know. But one day she gets like this pamphlet at her door which says that you can move to a different country called Clean Island, and before you get there, if you go there, it's like piece of heaven, or maybe you're entering heaven and the heaven is Clean Island, something like that. I again didn't understand that much because the translations are not that correct for this series, to be honest. I just understood like maybe the Clean Island is supposed to represent heaven, or a part where she can, you know, she can release all of her pain and her sins. So that's also a part of the story where she's talking about that she has sinned, and sin takes many forms, and she's wondering, where does sin comes from? Does it comes from the heart? So it's all like a part of the narrative, and she thinks that she can, once she enters Clean Island, she'll go to heaven or something like that. But before going there, there's that place called Immigration that's supposed to represent purgatory, and she's wondering if she has sinned. So she picks up the pamphlet, and then she gets ready along with the pig. She puts the pig, I should assume the dead pig, she puts that into a suitcase, and then she takes off to the immigration, to the airport, where she's taken into questioning, integration by the, there's no officer, there's like machines on the other side of the door, so I'm not really sure what's happening at that point, and I'm not really sure that the person who starts the integration is the same person who finishes that. So that's the point of this metaphorical story. What happens is we see another shot where she's in the washroom, she's like doing something, and then she realizes that something has changed during the period that she left the country that she was in to come to Clean Island, because during the journey, as soon as she came to the airport, or during the flight, I must guess, because it was like toilet, but it didn't look like a airplane washroom. But I'm not really sure, maybe when they got to the Clean Island country, the pig became a girl and it really became her. It's thought-provoking, but I'm not really sure how to explain it. You'll have to see it for yourself. So that's the part of the story. It leaves you questioning like which parts were her, like the narrator, the little girl, or what parts of her were the pig, or maybe she was the pig and she was not really a human kid, and she's also driving the narrative through our sins. It was interesting, I should say, and it didn't last long. So I think the run should be around 24, 25 minutes, because there was like 5 minutes at the end of the episode, which was like the making of this short story. And yeah, that's it for the first part. The second part of the drama series comes to the documentary that I saw in the trailer and expected more of that. But the first part got me more confused because it started to narrate the story of the girl as a pig or whatever, and thinking about how humans are not much better. And I don't know, there was a very weird juxtaposition of human being the animal being the human. I was a little confused. Also, the episode, the first episode was slower, but it still was a little over the place, because in order to be more complex, they started to drag the short episode. Even though I felt like it ended quickly, I still felt like it dragged at some points, and it felt slower. Like, I've seen slower series and I do not really mind them. I like the long drawn out pauses, but they need to be coherent to make some sense, because I didn't get like a fuller meaning. I get that at one point we were getting philosophical in that short story, but I didn't feel like it had a complete, I won't say like an ending, like, because it did have an ending. She gets, or the pig that's now human gets packaged as a product. But fuller meaning, maybe it could be also, now that I'm thinking about it, maybe it could be based on the documentary, because in this documentary the K-pop idol who's playing the actress talks about being a product, how she was categorized as a product for the industry, and lots of people told her that, and she also worried about losing her product value. So maybe it could be that. There were lots of things to think from, if I'm thinking right, like there were lots of things to think about when I saw that, but still I'm trying to find the meaning. Even with any philosophical narrative, even when you see it in a film or a short story, you want to get the real meaning behind it. But that short story, or should I say the episode one of this short series, leaves you a bit in the, a little bit in the woods, like you don't really know what's going on or what they were trying to hint at. Maybe it could have different meanings, maybe it's like open to interpretation, like they wanted the viewer to make or derive whatever meaning they wanted to derive from it. I think it's that, I guess it's that, I guess. I can only guess at this point. To be honest, watching the second part of the Persona Sully was hard. I took my time watching the second part of the documentary, because just clicking on the second part in the first 10 to 15 minutes, I got triggered. Also, there's going to be a trigger warning. There's going to be a trigger warning for this episode. So it's going to talk, I'm going to talk a bit more about depression and people trying to unalive themselves. So if you're not comfortable or if it is a trigger for you, you can stop listening right here. And after the next 10 seconds, I'm going to continue talking about the episode. Okay, so if you're still here and if you're still listening, let's talk about the second half of the Persona Sully limited series episode, or should I just call it a documentary because it doesn't have anything fictional. So it was directed like a talk show, and it still had like lots of things, since Sully, if I'm not wrong, that's how it's pronounced, and hopefully, or it's Suri, not really sure. Anyhow, she sat down to do a very in-depth interview, and before watching this, I didn't really know who she was, and I think I watched the second part on the first day it got released on Netflix itself, because honestly I wanted to see something non-fiction so it doesn't read like a script, and I'm trying to learn more Korean, so that was my intention with watching it. I thought it's like, you know, one of those variety shows, because in the trailer she's talking about watching dramas and something like that. So I just watched the trailer briefly before really coming into it. If I knew the backstory behind the documentary, and honestly lots of backstory about the person, since they aren't alive anymore, it's revealed, I think it's revealed, or I should say, like, she did touch on the things that were happening to her, her background, how she grew up, and also like at such a young age she debuted into the K-pop industry, and how it took its toll on her mental health. So she really talks about that, and she also like takes her time answering questions. She's really weighing her words, and you can see in the documentary she really thinks and chooses her words very carefully, and honestly she's also struggling with this, with those questions, because I think at some point in the interview she talks about how no one has asked her that question before. There are points like that in the documentary. So also I got triggered because I had like a mental health trigger in the documentary, and the point that I got triggered with was when she was talking about her childhood. She was talking about her, how her mom wasn't there, and how she felt like she felt really lonely, but she didn't really say that. She said that she wanted to make a doll that looks like her mom, and she waited a lot for her mom, and I could relate with that because when I was really young my mom was working all the time as a nurse, and she was also sick, so I have a lot of trauma from like waiting for her to get back home. And my dad was also like really not present. He was always outside, so it was me being stuck at home, also because my brother used to go to school and I would stay back, so I would just wait for her to come back from work. And it's not like she had any support in the sense that like my grandma or someone would look out for me. My dad's mom didn't really like me because I was a girl child, and my dad's mom didn't really like me, so that's like my paternal grandma, and something is very entirely wrong with my mom's mom. So that's like my maternal grandma. She doesn't like either of us, like either me or my brother. So I was always at home alone, and I used to wait for my mom a lot. Those are like my really early memories from my childhood, till I started to like really wonder where my brother used to go in the mornings. And I found really relating to Suli that she used to wonder like where her brother used to go, and she wanted to just think of a place like where her siblings are going and spending a lot of time, and there aren't any adults, and to feel that sense of belonging. At least that's what I grasped from whatever she was talking about. And yeah, I also used to wonder what that might have felt like, that structure or whatever. And she talked about that in a way that she never really got to experience that. She talked about people having a different world when they go to school, when they go to college, etc. And I felt like she never got to experience any of that, and that was very saddening for me, because I used to wonder about that too, in a sense, because I didn't really attend the last 2 years of my high school. I went to uni, but I didn't really attend it in a way, because I was working, and my university had like a free pass thingy. It just had like a very low attendance percentage, so I didn't really felt like I was a part of my university either. So yeah, but I did attend, I mean, I got to go to university, except the fact that she didn't, and that really stuck with me. She talked about how much she had to endure through you know, hate comments, people criticizing her. I cannot even fathom how that must have felt like, because I just cannot. I am only getting, I think, 0.001% of hate and toxicity through the comment section of my fiction books, and it's already so toxic. Whenever I read the comments, it's like people do expect you to be a product or something, or create a product so much that it loses the sense of individuality. Like, people forget that when you're creating art, and it could be in any way possible, it could be fiction, you could be writing books, you could be making paintings, it's acting, it's singing, it's a lot of things. Like, art could be a lot of things. Art could be even just categorizing things together, and because you are influenced by art, and you are doing something to express yourself and the things that you feel. So you are an artist at the end of the day, and people expect you to do that so much and so often that it kind of distracts you in a way, and it makes you feel very detached to the work that you're doing. And I felt like that's what she was experiencing. She talks about things in that manner, and how that can lead to burnout. So I also experienced burnout this year, and since with my context, I wrote every day since the pandemic hit, I think. The pandemic hit, I think I started writing every day since August in 2020, and I published fiction online every day till I got really sick at the end of last year. And even then, I went back and checked, like, did I take a long vacation? Because I was sick, really, really sick for a month. But I saw that I only took a break for less than a week when I was in a position of not even getting up. Like, I couldn't even sit. I couldn't even get out of bed. Like, I was so sick. I only took a break for less than a week, and I still had horrible comments. People berating me, judging me, telling me to delete my book, telling me that my writing is crap and not worth paying for. Just mean, toxic comments. And it's like people really forget that you're human. Like, even with the advent of internet or whatever, it's like internet is a medium. Whenever you're saying something or writing something really horrible in, you know, below someone's comment section, like it could be an Instagram photo, a video or whatever, or Twitter, and you're using your anonymity, it doesn't take away from the fact that the other person is someone with feelings. They're a human, and it hurts. It's like people forget that. And that's what she was talking about. She talked about how people have forgotten that she's still human, and I could relate to that. Like, I'll say I'm very, 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 very small, minuscule part, like 0.001% of whatever she went through. And I found out through the way she was talking, like, she's been working since she was a kid. She was a child star, so she was acting and working in the industry since she was a little girl. And to go through that sort of pressures since at a very young age, and then also she debuted as a K-pop idol. Again, I think she debuted very young, younger than 18, so that's like a lot of pressure. And she talked about, like, I went everywhere and people kept telling me to be a product, that you're a product. And at the end of the day, I had to worry about losing my product value. That's so disturbing. And honestly, that's so messed up. That's so messed up on so many different levels. Like, she's still human. I think since she started working at such a young age, she couldn't, like, I don't know, categorize things in her mind, because even though she had like a stage name and a persona, I think if she had someone mentoring her or looking out for her, I don't really know about her personal life, and I didn't really get to hear about anything of that sort while she was talking about how she felt. So I don't really know, and neither did I do research, because like I said, I was really triggered because my mental health hasn't been in the best place anyway, and just hearing things like that, it triggers me. So I was triggered. Okay, so I didn't really look anything up. I was talking about, she didn't talk about a mentor. So if she could have compartmentalized the fact that she's a person, and also, like, she is also someone who's Sully, that's like a stage name and a persona, and her life and Chae Jin-ri's life is different. Chae Jin-ri is a human who just sometimes work as silly. I think if you cannot compartmentalize, or if no one is teaching you how to do that, or if you do not have the adequate support system who helps you see that, it's very difficult. Like, it's very difficult to live as a human, especially if you've had a tough childhood. If nobody has loved you when you were a kid, it's very hard. And I could see things like that. The way she talked about her dad watching TV by, you know, laying on his, like, propping his head on his hands and elbows. It's like, it reminded me so much of my father, because it's like, he was there, but he wasn't there. And that's what she was trying to say. Like, this person was in her life, but he was good as, like, him not being there. It was just like that, and there's nothing he could have done. But yeah, I do not really understand why people have children when they do not know how to look out for them, or, you know, mentor them, nourish them, nurture them. If you do not know how to do that, just don't have children. But some people go ahead and do that anyway. It was tough watching that. I felt like she was in so much pain. She looked so sad. Her eyes looked so sad, and she had to self-soothe for every second of the documentary that I saw. She was stroking her face, her neck. She was running her hands through her hair multiple times. And again, I relate with that, because when I get super stressed, or if I'm trying to not feel something, run away from something, or whenever I'm overthinking, I'm always self-soothing myself by running my fingers through my hair. And I saw that in her, and oh my gosh, it really was really something. Also there were lots of other things that she talked about that I could relate with, and I would just say that was something very difficult. And it also felt like she was a very kind person. She talked about her stance on feminism. Also, like, people I don't know, tagging her as an attention seeker. I'm not sure. It seems like people really have nothing other to nitpick. Like, when she was talking about how people said that she goes braless for attention, that was such a low blow. Like, wearing underwear should be your personal choice. You do not get to dictate someone else's life, the way they dress, the way they show up, their appearance, their weight, their face, all these other things. It feels like basic etiquette to not nitpick things like that. And it's like very, I don't know, like, I don't understand this. I have no words. I'm sure, like, a public figure like her had a lot of eyes on her Instagram, and people were scrutinizing things and criticizing things. But trying to criticize something personal as someone's clothing or her face or her body, oh my god, that's so out of the question. I mean, why would someone in their right mind say something like that? I mean, focus on yourself. If you have so much time, then you have a lot of time on your hands. Like, if you have so much time to like go and criticize something like that. Think about doing something productive with your time, honestly. When she was talking about that, I was like, wow, people do have a lot of time on their hands. And this is the reason why, like, I try to not listen to K-pop, even though I like I think a few of the newer, I'll say, songs that I've discovered. There are some good songs out there, but of course, it was troubling for me because I think I was listening to New Jeans. Let's be honest, I liked New Jeans' new album, and I was listening through it, and I managed to go through the comment section once, and of course there were a lot of Korean comments, so I tried to translate. Of course YouTube lets you translate comments nowadays, and it was kind of shocking to me. Like, basically every other comment was talking about her visuals. Like, visuals, that's something I think the K-pop listening community uses to describe things such as appearance and the way someone looks. If you didn't know, because I was like, visuals? Okay, so that's what it is. And it was really shocking to me, like, so many people are talking about just how gorgeous she is, and there's nothing wrong about that, but no one really is talking about how good the song is or how much it reminds them of something or someone, because that's the vibe I get when I'm like listening to other songs on YouTube. And the community, the whole chatter, or I should say the whole conversation, looks very different on other artists. Like, for example, let's say American artists, let's say Ariana Grande, when you go through her comment section, of course some people are commenting how beautiful she is and how smoking hot she looks or whatever, but it's not like every comment is about her visuals. So I'm just trying to wrap my head around the tremendous pressure that some youngin who's not even 18 is facing, because literally every other person on their part of the internet is telling them how pretty and gorgeous they are, and now they have to just stick to that persona because that's who they are for these people. And if they try to change themselves, if they try to do something else, and if they try to not fit into the narrative that this community has chalked up inside their minds, then they are a very bad person and they will get hatred for it. So yeah, I could just, I mean, I cannot even fathom, I cannot even fathom the kind of pressure that New Jeans must feel, like the members of New Jeans must feel. Like, I cannot fathom, because I've never been put into that position, and I wonder how self-conscious one must get. I can wonder, like, if someone comments something about my skin or something, just one person, I get so self-conscious. So I just wonder, like, how must it be like for them who have literally everyone from, you know, young people to people who are legit adults telling them that they fit, they like their visuals and they fit into some kind of a fantasy that they've built up in their head about this person. And when any of those members will stop fitting into that narrative, into that caricature, then they will receive hate for it. And it looks like that's what happened to Sully. I hope I'm not pronouncing her name wrong. I mean, even if you're her fan, like, it would be very heartbreaking for you, because it feels like she was very lonely and sad, and also very unstable even during the interview, because she was crying 1 minute and then laughing the next. I saw a lot of things that I might have seen in myself when I gave myself the liberty to face my own issues. Like, I saw a lot of those things. It's like you're always trying to be tough, you're always trying to put on a mask because your real life is so troubling, and it's honestly so traumatic that you will try to hide that part of yourself because other people won't understand it, and plus other people are not that interested. And I could see a lot of that in her and the way she was talking, and it really gutted me, like someone who's kind as her, because for instance, not a lot of people are kinder nowadays. It's very hard to find that quality inside someone where people are just genuinely nice. It broke my heart to see her empathize with someone who bullied her, and she turned out to be, I think, a college student. It broke my heart for her to say that, when I heard her say that, like, the only thing that she can control is like her harming herself. So and when I think the interviewer asked her, like, why did you forgive the person who bullied you so much and posted like wild comments about you, she just said that she didn't say anything. Yeah, I remember that. Like, she didn't say anything because she didn't have any words. And I think another question that followed up, she said that because it's easier for her to harm herself than, and also like put herself down to, than to like hold other people to their words. Must have been very hard to just empathize with someone who's hurting you like that. She also said that, I mean, her views on feminism were like, I think coming from a very conservative country like Korea, I think she was hated primarily for her feminist views as well. She was saying that she acknowledged the one thing about feminism is like holding everyone in up to equal standards, and it's not like one person gets like some sort of advantage over the other. She didn't even feel superior, because I felt like when the person asked her that question, it took her a lot of time to just, I think, to see through the indoctrination. Like, she was indoctrinated that she's so pretty, her beauty is out of the world and everything. And in a sense, she said that like she doesn't feel superior, and that's how I could see that, like, you know, she's still a person at the end of the day, and it's like a fever dream, I think, to be that famous, and what fame can do for her and what it cannot do for her, in a sense. And yeah, through her feminist views, she acknowledged that even women can be wrong, everyone can be wrong, but she felt like she could root for women. She still felt like she can do that because she's happy that lots of women are finding their voices, even when they're using them for hurting other people, in a sense. I don't know. It just felt sad to watch all of that. And I wish she could have gotten the help that she needed. And if she would have gotten that, she would be here. And honestly, even though it took a toll on my mental health, I don't regret stumbling on that limited series or short series or whatever, because it kind of let me see, it helped me see, honestly, how depressed I've been my whole life, to be honest, and how much work I still need to do to get out of it, because I've also spent a lot of my life trying to undo a lot of things that living with so much trauma has indoctrinated in me. And when she talked about, you know, there's a point in the documentary when Sully talks about how she couldn't believe that she would be 20 years old, she would make it to 20. I've been feeling like that since I was like, what, 7 or 8 years old. I couldn't even imagine being 13 at one point in my time, in my life. And when I turned 13, I was very happy. I was like, I made it to 13. Now what's next? Then I couldn't imagine living up to 17, and then I couldn't imagine being 20. And now that I'm in my early 20s, I cannot imagine living up to, or like being 30. It's overwhelming. But it tells me a lot of things, like tells me how sad I've been and how I must like get out of this situation and try to find myself and be a better person, someone who looks out for themselves first, because that's also very important in this day and age. Saying that like a grandma, but it's true, like you need to look out for yourself first other than anyone else. And I wish Che Jin Ri also did that for herself. In the second part of the limited series, Che Jin Ri talks about how much she didn't want to be vulnerable, how much she hated it, until one day she realized that she would try to like let herself be vulnerable just for that documentary. And even during the whole interview, she kept talking about how she has messed up. And I could also feel that, like, whenever I've ever been or ever tried or ever said something that's like very close to me, something that I hide from the rest of the world, even from my close friends and family, like I hide a lot of things. I like keeping myself to myself in a way. And whenever a situation arises where you know I have to put myself out there, I choose not to do that, because it's just tough for me being vulnerable. So since Sully found the courage to do that through that Netflix documentary, otherwise we wouldn't have known what she has she was thinking before she left us. I thought that in trying to be honest and to respect her decisions, I would let myself be vulnerable in this podcast episode too, in a way to respect her. I wish lots more people were just honest, or at least try to be empathetic or be kind, or try to be understanding that sometimes people just have a hard time, and sometimes they are just different than how you are, and how they live is different. Like, there are so many different people out here in the world, and we have all had like tough lives. I don't think I've ever known someone who hasn't had a tough life. Like, I've never known someone like that. So people carry their own burdens, and things have happened to them, and things will happen to them that can make them like sad, depressed, anxious. So at least if you cannot say something positive, you should not be going out there and criticizing them, and especially not trying to criticize an artist for making their art, because that's the only thing that saves them from this world. And when someone tries to criticize that, it's like the end of the world for people like Jay Jindry. And I felt like that was the point the documentary was trying to make. And honestly, her story needs to be heard, because it's important and it's very relevant in this day and age when lots of people are choosing to be online creators rather than being no one. That's it. Thank you for coming in and listening to me. It was lovely talking to you. See you in the next episode. Bye.